You're listening to The MemoCast, brought to you by Bracket Magazine.
Hey, everybody. Mike and I are back for episode 2 of the MemoCast, and it was quite the exciting week this week. Have a lot of different talking points we want to get into. We are going to start again, and hopefully this doesn't become a thing where we talk about people who have died.
But the death cast.
No, it would be like, you know, today in memoriam. You know, it's like what the Talking Dead does for all the people who die in that week's episode. Oh, they do a montage of everyone dying. The person in question is H.R. Geiger, at least if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly.
Yeah, it's Geiger.
Yeah, you gotta be sure. And he is known most prominently for designing the actual, like, the Xenomorph from the Aliens franchise, you know, which is a big deal in this community, especially with the Aliens, or at least the first two movies, being as pivotal as they are.
Yeah.
I would even go on to say the fourth one is actually pretty good, too. Aliens 3, though, is just some bastard child. But more importantly is that he was actually part of a lawsuit in 1986 with the release from the Dead Kennedys, Frankenchrist, wherein they included a poster with their release, and there was penises, and, you know.
Well, that's the thing. That's what Geiger's known for, is his work phallic. Is very, very, very phallic. Like, if you've seen H.R. Geiger's Necronomicon, it's just like, oh, yeah, we're going to take everything Lovecraft talked about and just turn it into penises.
Dicks!
Yeah, dicks everywhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even look at the Xenomorph. I mean, come on.
It's, you know, so, you know, rest in peace, and hopefully you're not being tortured by a predator somewhere, wherever you are, you know? And on to more positive things.
Yes.
So this week was a big week for a lot of comic book news, so we're going to start off with what I feel has made the most waves, and that is the debut, or at least the picture, of the new Batman suit and the new Batmobile for the upcoming Man of 2 sequel that isn't the Justice League movie, but kind of is a little bit.
Yeah. I because the picture got released yesterday. Zack Snyder posted it to his Twitter yesterday, and I looked at it. And for me, I know a lot of people, especially within their community, are like super like, oh my God, Ben Affleck, he's going to make the worst Bruce Wayne Batman. Yeah. And, oh, Batman's going to be so devalued now. And it's like, have you like watched like some of the Batman movies from back in the day? Because I don't think Batman can be any more devalued. But as far as the actual picture goes, it to me, it just genuinely looked like Ben Affleck got outside to the Batmobile and, like, right after washing it and saw a bird shit on it. Like, the way he's looking down and at the Batmobile, he's just, I just fucking washed this car.
No, like, I definitely do. It took me a minute to get your point, because you said that on Twitter yesterday when I said, get to work. But, no, like, he does generally look really sad about it, but he's Batman, so I guess that's his thing. But, no, I think the actual, I'm more impressed by the suit than I am the Batmobile. It's got the very, was it Frank Miller, The Dark Knight Returns, like, look.
Yeah, the small ears, and it looks more gray than anything, than actual black.
Yeah. Which I'm really into, you know, and just even though we can really like only see his jawline, I feel like so far I think Affleck's gonna crush it. I mean, I've been in the minority where I actually think casting him is a good choice.
Yeah,
you know, I mean at the very least it's no worse of a choice than Val Kilmer or George Clooney.
Yeah, well for me, because Batman is so prevalent in not just in like nerd culture, but in pop culture in general, people who have never picked up a comic book before can be Batman lovers.
Yeah.
And so it's not so much about who's under the cowl, but the cowl itself.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, no actor, nor writer, or anyone who can actually devalue Batman in any way, shape, or form, or hurt the brand, franchise, or history, or whatever you're concerned with. It's more about the character, you know, himself, and what he stands for. And, you know, if Ben Affleck is a terrible Batman, then guess what? He's just going to join the ranks of other terrible Batmans, and in a few years we'll get another Batman movie.
Yeah.
Or another Batman project, and then everything will be fine. Life will go on.
We'll be in an endless cycle of new Batmans.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Doctor just regenerating. Batman regenerates.
Batman is the new Doctor Who. That's what it is. We just regenerate him every other season into a new Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? Going back into the time of all the different, like, Batmans, who would you say is your least favorite Batman in any incarnation?
Oh, probably George Clooney.
Yeah, I feel like everyone tends to go towards Clooney because he was. It is, you know what sucks is that George Clooney is a legitimately good actor. He just wasn't the right. A, he wasn't the right choice for that character, and B, that script was beyond horrible.
Yep.
It was like that was where they're like, let's see how many puns we can put in this movie.
Puns a movie.
Well, no, because there's a montage on YouTube where it's all of Mr. Freeze's puns. No,
here's the thing: there's a montage on YouTube of Arnold Schwarzenegger's top 100 puns from all his movies, and over half of them are from that movie.
Yeah.
From Mr. Freeze. So that says something.
Oh, yeah. But you know what the worst part about the movie, as far as Mr. Freeze goes, is why the hell does he have a cigar? I mean, I know that Arnold put in his contract, I want a cigar, but smoking a cigar would literally kill Mr. Freeze. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this makes no sense.
Yep.
You know what? Like, the cigar mix is less sense than the fact that they're all just like in an igloo with all his henchmen and watching Mr. Frosty sing, you idiots! You know, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, like I said, I'm excited for this costume. I'm excited for Ben Affleck. He's, you know, he's had some bad movies, but he's also has some really good ones. So I feel like the current track record leads me to believe that he's going to do great. And if people are kind of up in the air about Zack Snyder because people didn't like Man of Steel. I liked Man of Steel. I had its problems, but I overall enjoyed it. I still think it's a worthwhile movie.
Okay.
And with that, we're going to jump onto a completely different topic that's a lot more lighthearted.
Yeah.
And this is one I felt like I just wanted to mention that I came across is, Elsa from Frozen is going to be joining the series Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, in the upcoming season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is interesting, you know, because that shows how popular that movie is.
Yeah.
Well, really. Besides the plus billion box office turning.
Yeah. You go on Tumblr now, and it's just the Frozen fandom hijacks every single post.
Yeah.
There's Frozen GIFs on, like, everything.
Yeah.
And so I watched Once Upon a Time for, like, the first few episodes.
Yeah.
And then it just got to – I was just like, all right, I can't follow this. It's just not for me. But, I mean, if Frozen's going to be in there, I might check out those few episodes. I haven't actually seen Frozen. I just know all about Frozen from being on Tumblr.
Oh, yeah. To be honest, you probably already have the whole story.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? I Redboxed it. Mm-hmm. I watched it with Sarah, mm-hmm. my sister, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I don't want to say I didn't get the hype. I understood the hype, but I felt like it was partially unwarranted. I still think it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that, you know, all the money earned, you know, wasn't deserved. Because, you know, people enjoyed it, they enjoyed it. But I was like, I'm just probably just not the demographic for it.
Yeah,
you know,
you're really not.
Yeah, this is true.
You're really not. As you get older, you find more and more mainstream pop culture is not made for you, but for teenage girls of the era.
I wouldn't even say teenage girls specifically, predominantly maybe, but I would say teenagers.
Yeah.
More so girls.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, it's always catering to someone younger. You know, although I will say I Olaf is my dude.
Well.
You know, he's over like Olaf. And, yeah, so we'll see how that goes. Maybe we will, you know, live tweet some episodes of Frozen and then get a bunch of people to hate us because we're posting spoilers.
Yep.
And,
speaking of spoilers.
Yes.
Speaking of spoilers, I get to do the transition this time.
You go for it.
We're going to jump right into talking about Amazing Spider-Man 2, because Mondo and I went to the drive-in this last weekend.
Where you parked the car really shittily for you.
Yeah, because I reparked it.
Yeah, you fixed it, but I fixed it.
Yeah, on Instagram, I posted a picture of, like, the cross beam of my car is, like, going straight through the screen for me, and I'm like, why did I park here? So, yeah.
I said so.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about your perspective.
Exactly. Well, I was like, yeah, park here. It was a double feature. And before the break, we're going to talk about Amazing Spider-Man 2. And then after the break, we're going to talk about Captain America Winter Soldier, because those are the two movies. So, hey, spoilers, if you haven't seen Amazing Spider-Man 2 and you don't want us to spoil it for you, this is your chance to skip to, like, after the break.
Yeah. But you've had 2 weeks. If you haven't seen it now, you're not going to see it until it comes out on DVD, so...
Yeah, screw you.
Yeah.
First things first, that movie was basically just me yelling at the screen and you telling me constantly, Michael, suspend your disbelief. Michael, just... I think you told me at least, like, a dozen and a half times. Like,
I wouldn't say that many, but it was enough to where you could have, like, taken a shot every time and gotten fairly hammered.
Yeah, yeah. I was already kind of buzzed because we were drinking hard cider, and I was like, yeah...
But no, like, I dude, the biggest moment, a fail moment for that movie is sadly the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, that
scene makes no sense.
Like, you didn't have to include it.
The scene in the airplane.
Yeah.
It made no sense. They could have cut that whole thing out. The movie would have been better.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to explain to us, like, why his parents left. You could just kind of throw it in there in the middle. You know, I think it does a good explanation itself.
Yeah.
In the middle of saying, like, oh, well, you know, his dad didn't take the money. His dad was actually kind of noble. You don't need to show us that in the beginning.
Yeah, well, you know, the worst part is that it's like, all right, if you already have the means to hire one hitman to pose as a pilot, why not get two?
Yeah, from a story perspective as well. Like, I was talking from a writing perspective. It doesn't make sense, like, the entire pacing of it, and you can spread this information throughout the movie as a whole. But yeah, from a story perspective, like,
I was like, let me kill the pilot mid-flight.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why not have both of the pilots be hitmen in case one of them fails?
Yeah.
Like, that way you cover your bases. Not only that, but you pointing this out is like, kill the guy. You've knocked him out. What's to say?
Yeah. That's just, when he incapacitates the hitman in the beginning, and he's just laying on the floor, and he has the dude's gun, just put a bullet in his head.
I could understand not wanting to put the bullet in his head for the chance of compromising the pressure of the cabin, but dude, just bludgeon him until you know that he's not coming back.
Yeah.
Like, go for the jugular, too. Just snap his neck. So even if he isn't dead, he's not standing up.
Yeah.
You know? There are other problems. I feel like they kind of overloaded a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's like, you didn't, like, other than, like, the Gwen-Peter romance, you didn't get enough things fleshed out. Like, you didn't really get a chance to, like, understand, like, Electro as much as you could have.
Yeah, I think they kind of rushed, and that's the thing, we discussed this on the way home as we're driving home, that you better pray that you're not a villain in a movie, because your origin story is going to be so rushed.
Yeah.
And so absolutely, like, crammed into, like, 5 minutes of, like, well, we have to make this incredibly complex. The villains are complex characters, and that's what makes them so likable and so lovable, and I think that's why Loki from the Marvel, you know, cinematic universe is so beloved.
Because he's had the chance to shine. You get to understand his plight, that he's always been in his brother's shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Even worse, a brother who has been given something he doesn't want, but he does.
Yeah. And especially if you see some of the deleted scenes that Loki was given.
Yeah.
Loki was given the, you know, being king. Anyways, we're getting off topic here.
Yeah. But, I do want, before we jump back in, I want to take a quick little snippet to talk about how at least the first Spider-Man trilogy succeeded in fleshing out their villains, save for the last one.
Yeah.
You know, because you really got about as much time as Norman transforming as you did Peter.
Exactly.
And in fact, the Osborns, or, you know, like, Norman and or Harry were in each movie, so you got to see that friendship.
Yeah.
It was like, Harry wasn't even in the first one, they just kind of threw him in there.
Yeah.
Like, imagine how much ground time they could have saved if they had introduced Harry in that first movie.
Yeah, scenes of them skipping rocks down by the lake, like little boys, like, okay, I get it, they're friends, like, can we move the story on a little bit now? I think if they'd put that in, because I didn't see the first one, you caught me up to speed on it.
To be honest, like, I saw it, and I saw it twice when I was going to a comic book store. I was watching it, and I was like, this is all right. You know, like, could have been done.
Yeah.
But we've been talking a lot about the negative. Let's talk about, like I said, Gwen Stacy and Peter, like, together was, like, the perfect thing ever. In fact, if it weren't for that, the movie would have been kind of a waste.
Yeah, like, their relationship, like, the entire time, I was just like, oh my god, why?
Well, you're so perfect.
It's so perfect. They're so good for each other. Why?
And then she dies.
Yeah, spoilers, she dies.
I mean, if you didn't see it coming, you don't get all on the internet enough.
Yeah, she dies in the comic books as well, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And speaking of which, I was actually talking, what if she didn't die? What if she did end up going to England, which, by the way, her whole trip towards the end, that whole how she decides to leave randomly the same day she gets the spy is like the dumbest thing ever.
That was kind of dumb as well.
Also, how traffic is stopped and Peter just knows where she is and where she'll be. But what if she had...
Spend your disbelief, Mondo, okay?
Yeah, but what if she hadn't died? What if Peter is like, oh, okay, cool, she makes her flight, and then he goes to England?
I told you, we were discussing this in the car while we were there.
But they weren't there.
He's going to join Excalibur.
Yeah.
He would move to England, and then he would fight crime in London with Excalibur. And we would have an entirely new movie franchise that they can branch out into.
Yeah. I would just love to see him, like, have them do a movie where he's just solving all this crime, and then New York's like, oh, well, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's the rhino. He destroyed all of New York by himself because you're over there in England.
No, but I would love it. I would love to watch a movie about him fighting crime in the land of my forefathers. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. And I guess this is the final talking point since they're setting up a Sinister Six, you know, thing going on. I feel like had they started the Sinister Six groundwork a little bit earlier, it would have cared a lot better. Just how they put Paul Giamatti in there as, like, a teaser. What if they had put another Sinister Six villain in there, like, in a beginning and an end scene in the first one?
Yeah.
You know, imagine, like, you would already have two villains somewhat introduced, you know, Harry being a third. So you there's less setup for you to really make it all happen in this future installments. Because I thought it was perfect. You see him once, you know who he is, you know that he's Russian, and because he's Russian, he's evil.
Yeah.
And you know that he wants revenge on Spider-Man. So you have the basic kind of, like, all right, I know who he is and what he's all about.
Yeah.
And technically, I mean, they technically gave us two if you consider Felicia – Harry's assistant to be Felicia Hardy, or at least some incarnation of her, who'd go on to be the Black Cat.
Yeah.
So that works better when you just make it something a little minor. You don't have to be like a huge thing.
Throw it in there kind of just under the radar there, so that people who maybe have never read the comics or, you know, don't know a lot about Spider-Man would be – they're able to keep up and catch on and be like, oh, okay, like – He was in the last movie. This is where he came from. And people who have read the comics before and know what's going on can go, oh my god, that's so-and-so. He's going to be this villain later.
Yeah.
But yeah, on my closing note on this entire topic, if they don't rehire J.K. Simmons to be, you know, J. Jonah Jameson, I'm not going to watch the next movie.
Yeah, this whole franchise will have been a waste if they don't bring him back.
Yep. And then Willem Dafoe as Mr. Fierce.
He's like, I'm going to get you, Spider-Man! You know. And on that note, we're going to take a musical break. We've got two songs, since these two songs combine add up to the total runtime of the one song we played last week. So we're going to play a Joyce Manor song from their demo from years ago, because they just signed Epitaph Records, and that's really awesome news for them. We're also going to play a song by the band Bike Ride, which is comprised of members of the Aquabats, but sounds nothing like the Aquabats.
Oh, okay.
And then when we come back, we'll talk about Captain America Winter Soldier.
Bye, guys.
Bat landed on my face once.
Hey, you know what? He's not a rack of ribs, so stop grilling him.
If you enjoyed those songs, I'm the one to thank. And if you hated those songs, I'm the one to blame. So hopefully you didn't think they suck. But if you did, well, the next discussion we're going to have is about something that didn't suck, which is Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Out of the two movies we saw this last weekend, I made sure that we saw this one second because there have been like two double features, where one where Captain America played first and then one where Amazing Spider-Man played first. Yeah. And I made sure we went to the one that this one played second. And
so you can end on a high note.
Yeah. And it was pretty freaking awesome. I actually really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think I only had like one stupid nitpick thing that I didn't like about it.
But. Which, to be honest, like at least in one of those scenes, it makes sense. And that's like, if there's like a hit on Nick Fury, why is it so high profile?
Yeah. Okay. It was two nitpick things that I didn't like. But yeah. One was like all these like, if you're Hydra and you're trying to be a covert organization within a covert organization, why would you send out these really high-profile, high-damage, huge publicity hits on such a high-profile person?
Yeah.
And second, if you're Nick Fury, why the hell are you not with a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent at all freaking times? I know you're Samuel motherfucking Jackson, but really, 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 Sam, come on. We know you're badass and all.
I felt like they really wanted like some crazy car chase scene, which I feel like they could have done similarly without it being so high profile. Like, he could have easily been like, well, I'm going to check one of my many Nick Fury offsite, like, unknown of bases. And as he's trying to get there, he's like, what are all these? Oh, shit. And then he's like, bam. They could have done that in some secluded area, and it still could have worked. You know? But, The other high profile hit with like on Cap and all of them, I think at least as far as movie is concerned, does make sense. And the reason why I say that,
you guys can't see, but I'm giving him a look.
No, the reason why I say that is because at that point you know Captain America is wanted for withholding information, which is something they could play off and be like, they could spin that however they wanted, be like Captain America is secretly behind Nick Fury's hit, we were after him, or this or that. Yeah. So that they could have spun that however they wanted.
Pierce could have gotten up in front of a microphone and said whatever the hell he wanted. And,
No one would have known had they caught him.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why I said that one at least is justifiable. You know.
Okay.
But let's you know, I liked the interpretation of Arnim Zola they had in there.
Yes, you were telling me because I'm not entirely too familiar. Mondo is more the encyclopedia on comic books. I have a more cursory knowledge of comic books in the comic book universe. And so I wasn't really familiar with Artem Zola, and then you told me, and I think, did you show me a picture?
I showed you a picture where it was, like, his body is, like, this weird, like, robotic thing where his face is in the middle.
That was
and
weird.
And I was like, that would, like, never work in a movie. I think people, like, would be too turned off and be like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Especially because, like, I feel like Cap is the most grounded of all the Marvel movies, and even though he has some really out there, like, rogues.
Yeah.
I felt like this was the only way they could include him and have it make sense.
Yeah, and it actually did make sense, him being, you know, on reels and reels and reels of tape underground somewhere.
Yeah, with his whole mind, like, on a computer.
Yeah. That actually did make a lot of sense. I like that.
Yeah. The Arnim Zola algorithm.
The Zola algorithm. What did this algorithm say?
it's a map to tell you how to find everybody. You know, but yeah. the let's talk about some Easter eggs, and then talk about a couple other topics, and then jump off this one.
Yeah.
Two big Easter eggs for me, the first one was the whole Stephen Strange one. They're on the roof, and it's like, it's to find enemies. Anybody would need to stop, like Nick Fury or Stephen Strange.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. Oh, it's if you're not paying attention, like, you could easily miss
slips.
It. The next one is how Gary Shandling's character is a member of HYDRA, which actually makes more sense given his relationship in the Iron Man movies.
That was hilarious.
You know?
And the funny thing is I've seen all these weird, like, Hail HYDRA, like, GIFs on Tumblr.
And they didn't make sense till right now.
Yeah, and then I went home, and then with the one where, like, Elmo is hugging the kid, and he says, Hail HYDRA, I lost my shit.
Yeah. And the biggest one is Samuel L. Jackson's tombstone.
Yeah, and it says, for those of you who might not have caught it or you go to see it, just keep in mind, because I'm not going to say it, I don't want to spoil it for people, but if you rewatch the movie, keep in mind Samuel Jackson's previous projects and some of the characters he's played in his previous projects, and look at the quote on his tombstone.
You might need the remote with the pause button ready for this, but it's definitely worth it because it's for a pretty good laugh.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I was laughing maybe a good 10 minutes, and Mondo was like, "Dude, seriously, shut up! It's not that awesome.
The movie's not done yet.
Yeah.
We still got two button scenes."
Yeah,
no. But the one thing I really loved is, there were some scenes with Bucky that, like, you got me choked up a little bit the first time. Not so much the second time, because I was more used to it, but but that original time seeing it where you know, they're fighting on the helicarrier, he's like, I don't know you!
Yeah, and he's like, oh my god, I was his best friend.
Yeah, or the scene when they're about to wipe him, and he was like, but he knew me, or whatever he says.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, alright, wipe him, and he's like, no!
Yeah.
You know, that was like, see, that was something Spider-Man needed, a villain that you have a chance to understand who he is.
Yeah.
Especially because I felt this was the perfect villain for a sequel, because you know who Bucky is from the first one and how much of a chance he got to shine there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you didn't need a setup of who he was, is how he became the Winter Soldier, which, you know, they give a little teaser scene in the first Captain America, because, you know, you say when he saves him, he's in a lab.
Yeah.
So that's how you piece it together.
Exactly.
And so I was like, that was perfect setup. Just plant this. If you're going to do a universe or several movies, plant the seeds for the sequel's villain in the movie before it, so that way there's less time needed. So in case you have to do all this other stuff, it still doesn't feel rushed or like it doesn't make sense.
That is something I will credit the new Marvel Cinematic Universe with doing, is if they don't have a plan, they sure as hell know how to drive like they do have a plan.
Yeah. Which they do. They have, like, tentative plans up until, like, 2028.
Yeah, so we're going to be watching these kinds of movies for a long time.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because all this whole cinematic universe was just an after credit scene at the end of Iron Man, and had that movie tanked, wouldn't have been anything.
Yeah.
But they knew from then, like, we want to do this. Let's see if we can't make it happen. And here we are many, many years later.
Speaking of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, and this Marvel Cinematic Universe also has a television aspect.
Yeah, so they are, and I'm not as familiar with this as many of you might be. We just thought we might bring it up and kind of throw it to you guys to chew on.
And theorize more on the latter of the two show announcements.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2, they got renewed recently for Season 2, and the finale just passed, right?
It's either just passed or it's next week.
Yeah.
The point is, we're in the midst of it.
Yeah. I am one of those people that fell prey to the whole, like, well, this show's not grabbing my attention right off the bat. I'm not going to, you know, spend my time watching it. But apparently it got really, really good.
Yeah. That's what happened with me. I watched the first episode and I was like, it's all right. And then I just never bothered to check up on it again. And then I heard that around the time they did the tie-in episode of Captain America Winter Soldier, it just became a completely different show and is way better.
Mm.
So now I want the season to end so I can just watch it and be like, this is the point at where it stops to being less than stellar and starts being amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, all right, and then really give an honest critique. Because if I had, like, kept watching it from week to week, I'd been like, oh, it's another mediocre episode.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a really good one. Now it sucks again.
Yeah.
You know, at least this is where I can, like, gauge it and give a proper review. But they also announced a new show, which we'll want to talk about more, is the Agent Carter show.
Yeah. She had her own one-off.
Yeah.
Which I haven't gotten around to watching yet.
It's like, online.
So many of these things that we bring up, I'm just like, oh, I haven't had time to watch it yet.
Make time.
Yep. Make it a priority.
Yes.
But I heard it was really good. Like, everyone that I've talked to about it says it's really awesome.
Yeah, you know, you get a chance to see Dominic Cooper come back as Howard Stark. You get a chance to see you get Dum Dum Dugan. Forget the actor who plays him, but he makes an appearance. So it's really fun. And if part of me feels like if they were in the one shot, I feel like there's a good chance, at the very least, the latter of the two, Dum Dum Dugan, will be in the show as like a full time cast member. You know, because obviously, like, after watching Winter Soldier, there's a scene where Steve is talking to Peggy, and she mentions, you know, he mentions that, you know, I'm only with S.H.I.E.L.D. because you started it.
Yeah.
And so, for me, it's like, all right, you know, she's going to be leading a team of badasses.
Yeah.
And so, what better badasses than the Howling Commandos?
That makes perfect sense.
Well, it makes perfect sense, given that there's that whole display in the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, it's like, well, they had a really cool montage in that one scene where they're getting rescued, but I felt like I wanted a little bit more of the Howling Commandos.
Yeah.
And so I feel like this is a way to keep Cap where he is in the future, but give us all those lost Howling Commando moments that we could have gotten.
Yeah.
You know.
Speaking of alternate universes and, you know, things in the Smithsonian, you know, Captain America exhibit, I am so glad that if we lived in an alternate universe, like if we lived in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or we lived in the Marvel Universe, that we live on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Like, the East Coast is so totally fucked when it comes to superheroes.
Like, could you imagine, like, the news update? Like, oh, speaking of which, another beautiful day with no attacks by evil supervillains whatsoever.
Yep.
In fact, the only heroes I think we currently have... We don't even have the X-Men anymore, because the X-Men were in San Francisco for a while.
Yeah.
We don't even have that. All we have is Daredevil and maybe the Runaways, who have kind of been like this weird limbo of, like, they're not a book, but we're still using the characters and reference them, and maybe one day I'll bring back a book, but so far that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
And so it's like...
That's right, Daredevil moves to L.A.
Well, no, it's San Francisco.
San Francisco, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it moves to California.
Yeah.
So essentially, if we lived there, if we wanted to go hang out with Matt Murdock, we could just take, like, a
300-mile drive to San Francisco.
Hey, it's 8 hours. Plus, you know Daredevil's, like, villains aren't going to, like, level a city.
Yeah. Because he's a street-level villain.
Yeah.
He's a street-level hero, so...
Yeah, I would say he's, like, a higher street-level villain, but he deals with some crazy shit.
Yeah.
He actually does deal with in his last storyline that causes him to move to San Francisco, he deals with the Brothers of the Serpent or whatever, like, this name of this organization is.
We should... You know what we should do? We should actually make our own, like, a Los Angeles, Southern California-based hero.
We should just make our own.
Yeah.
What would their power even be?
The power of earthquakes.
So basically Kwame from the Planeteers, just not a ring. He just naturally...
Yeah.
Or Avalanche.
Damn it.
They already exist.
Yep. Screw it. We're screwed. You know what? No, we don't even need...
The second choice I was going to say is Fire, but then that's Wheeler from the Planeteers. Or Pyro.
Yeah, because our state sets off on fire, like, every fall.
Or wind.
Yeah.
But that's Linka.
That's it. Just reboot Captain Planet and have it set in Southern California.
There, yeah, it's done. Like, all your powers are based on nature. No, based on different events that can destroy California if we're not careful.
Destroy California.
Why is Hart here? Think about it.
Just think about it.
Oh, my God. But, they should. They do need to bring back the Planeteers now that I mentioned.
Speaking of reboots, oh, master of the segue.
Television.
Yep.
Constantine.
Constantine
coming to NBC this fall.
I'm. You heard the news before I did, but I showed you the trailer before you could watch it.
This is true.
I'm gonna give it a chance.
I'm definitely, like, the day of the premiere. I will not. If I cannot be working, I will not DVR. I will watch it live.
DVR it for me, because... Wait, no, I could DVR it at my house. We have that
technology. I was like, I could DVR it for you, or I could just give you a link to Hulu the next day.
Yeah, that's true.
No, it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
Especially given that that Hellblazer movie we saw of Keanu Reeves was... Well, besides the fact that it was a movie of Keanu Reeves...
Poor sad Keanu.
Yeah, it was very... Not good.
Yeah. I'm excited for it, because I'm vaguely familiar with the Hellblazer comics. It's one of those things that I've picked up a couple times and kind of flipped through when I'm in the shop. But also one of those things that, like, I spent, like, an entire night just, like, reading on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I do that sometimes. I just get lost in these Wikipedia rabbit holes.
I think we all do.
Yeah, so.
I think that's that kind of defines your generation. What did you do last night? Wikipedia?
Yeah, for, like, 3 hours.
Yeah. No, like, John, like, Constantine, he had the Hellblazer was the comic book on Vertigo, which is DC's imprint, and then he, in this, like, New 52 recently, not recently, almost a year ago, I think now, he got upgraded to DC status, and they gave him his own new book there. But before that, they had him do a lot of guest spots and even join some other books. Like, he did guest spots in Animal Man and Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
And he was part of Justice League Dark for a while. I haven't kept up with Justice League Dark, so he may or may not still be on the team.
Yeah.
But, so he's been doing that. So DC's really been making use of him.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the current interpretation, I like what I've seen. You know,
yeah.
It's a fun read, no matter like what book he comes out in, and so I feel like they're really jumping on the fact, hey, people are, you know, into the book, let's see if we can't try again and this time actually put some heart and effort into it.
Yeah,
in fact, the only qualm I might have, and I don't even know, is like, it's a TV show, like, how are they gonna work the budget, like,
yeah,
how is that gonna,
I really, okay, here's two things, that one that I'm excited about that we brought up when we were talking about rebooting DC's cinematic universe when we were drunk.
Yeah.
And another thing that I'm kind of worried about. One, I do not want them to Dresden Files this series. And for those of you who don't know, Dresden Files is a series of books written by Jim Butcher, and it follows a wizard, a practitioner of, you know, the magical arts, living in Chicago, named Harry Dresden.
Yeah.
And it's a very popular book series amongst, you know, book nerds like me. And the books are absolutely amazing. They're very, very, like, film noir in style, and they're narrated from his point of view. And they made a series. I think it debuted on Sci-Fi, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely sucked. And they tried to take this really, really awesome, magical, universe and cram it with this low-budget sci-fi...
Yeah.
You know, series, and it absolutely blew chunks, and it was so terrible, and the pacing was terrible, and the characters weren't what they could have been, and so that's what I'm worried about with Constantine, is that they don't have the budget to really bring this magical universe and make it as full and expansive as it could be. But going back to what we said, we were talking about ways to reboot the DC cinematic universe the other night, and we got on the topic of a Teen Titans movie, or a Young Justice, or we were calling it Young Titans, the movie.
Young Titans, the movie.
In which we were trying to choose a team of six young DC heroes to throw into this movie together and kind of make them the Young Justice Teen Titans.
Yeah, hybrid.
Yeah, and we got into the magical aspect of the team, and I wanted to include Raven.
Yeah.
In that team, and you said no.
I said, even though she's more of an adult, but Young Justice, they made her, like, young, because I would rather see Zatanna.
Yeah, you said Zatanna.
Because part of that is because I feel like that would be easier to adapt on the screen, because of Raven, you have all this, like, demonic spirit stuff you gotta go into.
And you said that you would like to see her in a Hellblazer comic.
Yeah.
And what they should do is put her in the TV show. That'd be kind of awesome.
That would actually work really well.
You know, even if it's just like maybe during one of her, you know, because she has these certain points in time where, you know, because of her powers and her dad and everything, she gets kind of haywire. Like, she becomes a big bad during a certain period during the TV show.
No, I feel like that would be a great introduction to the character as far as, like, live action interpretations go. And it would be a really cool way to get kids who are now not kids, or even, like, who, like, grew up on, like, that original version of Teen Titans cartoon on Cartoon Network, be like, oh, what? Raven's in this, like, Constantine show? I want to check it out.
Yeah.
Especially because they know it's not going to be watered down. If anything, it's going to be right up their alley.
Yeah. The only problem is they'd have to fight Cartoon Network for the rights to the character.
You know what? This could be true.
Yeah.
You know? But we will see what they do with this, and maybe someday that might actually be possible.
Yeah.
Who knows? But let's go on to our next talking point, which won't be as lengthy as the last couple ones because it's really just a snippet. But so Channing Tatum is now cast as the new Gambit.
I'm for it.
You know what? Like, I am kind of like, I want you to explain why you're for it, because I'm kind of like, I don't see that really working so much. Like, I like Channing Tatum. I thought he was great in Magic Mike. And, like, you know, the G.I. Joe sequel that he was in. And the 21 and 22 Jump Street movie. Like, I feel like he's a funny guy, but I don't know if he can carry this role of Gambit. So,
Here's the thing. You have to understand, And for those of you at home, you have to understand, I have very low expectations. I discussed this last week. I have very low expectations
for everything.
Yeah, for the media that I consume. So I would rather be pessimistic about it, or like just be like, oh, I'll see what happens, and then be pleasantly surprised than actually like be like, oh, no, I don't, you know, I'm not looking forward to it. I had such high expectations for this movie. I'd rather just kind of like level my expectations and be like, we'll see what he can do.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I haven't really, after I think like X3,
mm-hmm.
I have not watched a single one of the X-Men movies. Like any of the spinoffs, any of the Wolverine spinoffs, any of, I didn't watch First Class. I haven't watched anything X-Men related. And I even only half paid attention to X3. Like after X2 is where I feel like kind of like,
dude, X2 is fantastic. What the fuck are you talking about? Dude, X2 is amazing.
Didn't tickle my fancy.
Well, your fancy needs to shut the fuck up. No, I say you should rewatch it now. I think you might appreciate it more now. You have to understand, we were like, what, 14, 15 when that came out?
That's true. We were really young.
You would, because the problem with people have X2 is there's not enough action. I say, but they, you know, there was a great story involved, you know? Dude, plus Nightcrawler stole every single scene he was in.
He was a really good character. Yeah. I will give him that. Yeah, he was really awesome.
He's like, in the circus, I was known as the great... Yeah, shut up.
But as far as Channing Tatum as Gambit, I mean, if he can get the Southern drawl down and really play up that charm aspect of the character, I think he might be able to pull it off.
They might need to have him get a little less massive.
This is true, because, you know, Gambit's kind of...
He's not that slender. Huge.
Yeah.
But speaking of low expectations,
oh god!
So this week, if you're listening to this podcast last week, I suppose somebody unearthed some footage of when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were on Oprah back in the '90s, and this was around the time the first movie came out. And to help promote the first movie, they created this live stage show called Coming Out of Our Shells, which was like a huge musical production. And it was, in my opinion, it sucked really bad. And you can really tell after watching the 3 minutes that Michael did of the Oprah episode.
Yeah. The only thing I'm going to say about this is after he got done showing it to me, I told him to turn it off. And then after he did, I turned to him and I said, Armando, we've been friends for over 10 years. Why do you hate me?
I have a long list. But you know what's funny is that this really exemplifies everything that I've hated about a lot of the various aspects of Ninja Turtles franchise throughout the years.
Yeah.
It's too cheesy. It's too corny. It's too silly. It's too dumbed down. I didn't enjoy it.
They should be like the original Black and White Turtles comics and just merc fools.
You know which interpretation out of all the ones I've seen, besides the first movie, that I felt was the right balance of like comedy, kids' humor, and like action, was the 2003 series on Fox.
Was that the one where they go back through like the special you made me watch, where they go through
the Turtles Forever, and they meet like the
old different Okay. Yeah, that was actually pretty good. I actually really liked that one.
Yeah, you know, and that it's funny is because they really illustrate how campy those 80s Turtles were.
Yeah, I'm going to build a tickle machine for the Turtles.
And I was just like, I love how old Shredder meets new Shredder, and like new Shredder was like, get out of my face. Yeah. Like, how dare you embarrass the name of Shredder?
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
But and before we touch on to our last topic, one of the best scenes in that movie is when Hun looks at Raphael, because he does that thing where he breaks the fourth one. He goes, "Who are you talking to? There's nobody there."
That's awesome. Yeah,
that was beyond perfect.
Yeah,
and so the last thing we're gonna talk about is the Xbox One. So
yeah. Of the two of us, I'm kind of the more gamer nerd savvy. Mondo's comic books. I'm a little bit more in the gaming spectrum. The Xbox One, Microsoft just announced like yesterday or the day before that they are going to introduce an Xbox One that does not require the Kinect, and that they're going to start scaling back the paywall that you have to get through in order to use your streaming services on Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
Which, oh my fucking god, Microsoft, why did you not do this last generation, you pieces of shit? And this is really awesome for me, because one of the things I thought was a huge problem, especially with Microsoft this generation, is Microsoft is now the Sony of this generation. Last generation, Sony really thought they could get away with whatever the hell they wanted to, because the PlayStation 2 from the previous generation before that was so amazing and did so well that they thought they could just shove anything down gamers' throats.
Yeah.
And we were going to eat it up. And so the PlayStation 2 had terrible online infrastructure. You had these terrible, you know, updates that would take hours and hours and hours that, you know, you could not get around. And then they kind of learned their lesson this generation and kind of scaled it back.
Yeah, they made the PS4 amazing.
Yeah. And now the Xbox, the X-Bone, I think Microsoft's kind of learning their lesson. They tried to shove DRM down our throats. They tried to shove the Kinect down our throats. And now they're kind of learning, like, hey, maybe we need to give the consumers what they actually want and not what we feel they want.
I think the whole Kinect thing was like they saw the Wii, you know, do really well with that, and then they realized that their market fan base just doesn't want it.
Exactly.
If I wanted the motion sensor shit, I would buy a Wii.
Yeah.
I have a Wii.
Yeah. And even then, the motion sensor shit with the Wii is just a gimmick anyways.
Yeah.
I did not get up and play my games at all when I
had it. I didn't be like, let me do this. The only time I would use the motion sensor on the Wii is for, like, the dancing games.
Yeah.
Which was kind of fun. But other than that, I'm not going to play Legend of Zelda. If I want to work out, I'll go to the gym. I do go to the gym. I don't need a fucking Wii to work out.
Yeah. And as far as reducing the paywall behind our streaming services.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Sony had been doing this forever. They need to just get with the times and realize that, you know, I'm not going to pay extra money to watch Netflix when I can watch it on my computer.
Yeah.
Or I have a TV that does Netflix or Hulu Plus or HBO Go or whatever for free from my TV, why do I need this box to do it? Why do I need to pay extra for this box to do it?
Yeah. Now I don't have to worry about paying for the WWE Network twice.
Exactly.
You know, or anything like that. And so Xbox, thank you for following. Well, Microsoft, for finally pulling your head out of your ass. We appreciate you. And with that, we're going to say thanks for listening.
All right. Bye, guys. It's time to say goodbye. Goodbye.